Let's continue with Perek Gimel. And here the Rambam is going to introduce the two other theories of creation. The first one is he attributes to Plato. In fact, actually, he quotes the Timaeus. And the second opinion he attributes to Aristotle, which he quotes the Physics. Now, I'm not going to go into today. Is what the Rambam is saying, is that what's written in Aristotle and Plato? Because that's already a separate thing that we'll speak about next week, Lamaisa. Because there is, not sure whether the, we have to actually take a look at what the scholars say on this, but it's not clear at all in what form this information was transferred to the Rambam. It's not clear at all. But anyway, it's like this. But we'll go through the words, try to dive into the words and see exactly how we understood these two different shitas. So I'm going to be reading from the from page 299 in the Schwartz edition. He says like this: Hadeya Shnia, the second opinion, Hideya Kol Misha Shamano, everything we've heard, everything that we've heard is words from the philosophers, meaning that the Rambam evidently did not read ancient Greek, but must have, had secondary sources. Hey, my brethren, they say, Shelo yitachet shakel yavili de metzias davar b'leit davar. They say it's impossible that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can bring into existence something which doesn't exist. The Daitam, according, in their opinion, gam yim shar shi yichal davar eloi davar. Similarly, something which exists cannot somehow cease to exist. In other words, it's impossible that something which has both chaymer and tzura cannot be created from something which is meheder gomor, from total non-being. It cannot become non-being. In other words, not in a change in the tzura, but actually, it's impossible that something could ever merge from nothingness and or vanish into nothingness. L'daitam, in their opinion, L'yachas l'keil shuyochel asoy zois kamoyu, right, to say that a Kadosh Baruch could take being from non-being, kamo l'yachas lo shuyochel atzarav shnei kudim z'man achad. It says that a Kadosh Baruch could create two things that are opposite each other at one time. O'levro kamo yisgis aleh. Kadosh Baruch could create something like a Kadosh Baruch. Or lahafak has asked for a goof. Can he turn himself into a physical body? Or livroi meruba, asher koit roi shovel etzaloi. Or, for example, can he create a square that the diagonal is equal to any one of the sides? Chayetze be'el hanim nois. Now, the ma'aseh, we'll speak a little bit while about it. The Rambam himself holds that you can't do these things. In fact, we're actually going to see that actually one of his the main attack that the Rambam makes in chapter 73 on the Kalam is the Kalam claims that anything that a person can imagine, right, is a possibility. In fact, not even illogical possibilities. So in other words, the fact is that what the Rambam is doing is, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can create, can make himself into a guf, the Rambam would say is impossible. The Kadosh Baruch Hu create a square that the diagonal has the same size as the sides is impossible. So what the Rambam is saying is that they're claiming that to create being from non-being is on the same level of impossibility as it is to create a square where the diagonal is equal to one of the sides. Now the Rambam very strongly believes that the latter is impossible for God to do. Okay, so let's go further now.
Well, the Rambam says that when he talks about the theory, he's not talking about God. He's talking about arguing on the idea of the Kalam that something that you can imagine is a raya that it must exist.
No, not it must exist. It can exist.
But it can exist.
Right. So Rambam says it can't exist. It's about to exist. Therefore, God cannot create it. The Rambam held that God could create things like that. That it could exist. God could create it as such. In other words, in Perakai and Gimel, the Rambam doesn't even speak about illogical possibilities. The Rambam says in Perakai and Gimel, he has different hanachas. I think the hanacha asiris, which is actually on in the Schwartz edition, page 218, that the Rambam speaks about Kadosh Baruch Hu create things which are unnatural, which go against nature. I know large things which rise, and the Rambam says that's impossible.
Ships that fly.
Yeah, it's impossible. Kavachomer, and he like Kavachomer, a something which is a something that can be proven. I mean, these are things that can't be proven. Something that can be proven. No, it's clear. I think the Rambam also must say explicitly somewhere else, too. I just didn't get a chance to look at it. It's clear that with the exception of creation ex nihilo, the Rambam held that all these things were not impossibilities. In fact, if you really think about what the Rambam is doing, the Rambam is actually providing a rationale for this theory of creation. The theory of creation is saying, in a quite reasonable manner, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot create a square whose diagonal is equal to one of the sides, or create make a body out of himself, so too Kadosh Baruch can create being from non-being. I mean, in other words, in order to disprove this, one would have to prove that in fact actually going from non-being to being is a possibility. Now, if you actually go to chapter 73 and you look at the tenth premise, in my opinion, a lot of the things the Rambam is attacking the Kalam there are much more likely, you know, a white elephant or a pink elephant is much more likely than going from non-being to being. Even I think in the lectures I'm working on Rabbi Soloveitchik, he wants to claim that non-being to being is a logical impossibility. So in other words, the Rambam is actually, when you think about it, the Rambam is actually making, in a certain sense, giving a rationale for why they believe the way they believe. But now the Rambam goes on further. Now, the question is, says the Rambam, from what they're saying, right? In other words, muven shem oimrim. In other words, the Rambam now is interpreting what they're saying. In other words, they're claiming that God cannot possibly bring being in from non-being, just like God cannot create something which is a logical impossibility. So says the Rambam, I understand what they're saying as follows. Kishem she'ein chayse oidim legaba, v'kach, she'ein umevi es hananois l'day metzius. Just like we would say that, for example, just like a Kodesh Baruch Hu cannot create 1 plus 1 equals 3, we wouldn't say that because of that it's called chayse oidim. In other words, we wouldn't attribute to Kodesh Baruch Hu a lack of ability if he could not bring about something which is a logical impossibility. Right? Because something, a nimna means something which is a logical impossibility. It's something, he calls it teva kavua. In other words, it can't be created. In other words, it's not something that's likely to change. It's something that, in principle, cannot exist. In other words, it's impossible to take something which can't be, right, and make it be. In other words, to make a very rational argument. Just like you would say that if a Kodesh Baruch Hu cannot create a square where the diagonal is equal to the sides, and you wouldn't say because of that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is, you know, we've detracted from his powers, so too, right? They say that just because if we say that Kodesh Baruch Hu cannot create being from non-being, that does not in any way detract from his powers. Because something, in other words, something which is a nimna, which means it can't be, doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. In other words, a Kodesh Baruch Hu is powerful, all-powerful, in the sense he can create things which can exist. Something which can exist, right, doesn't in any way detract from Kodesh Baruch Hu's powers. So now, what's interesting is, when you think about it, what is the Rambam doing? He's defending them. He's actually, the Rambam, in a certain sense, is actually providing a very, very strong argument why I should believe in the Shita.
That's not such a strong argument.
Why not?
It's within a certain context. If you take for granted that I can do anything, it can do anything. It's not.
It's not true. The Rambam's whole attack. The Rambam's attack on the Kalam.
The Rambam's attack. It's fine.
He rejects the Kalam for this reason. But in other words,
if you take it as a matter of faith that God could do anything, then he can do anything.
But the Maaseh, there's no word in the Bar Nevuchim where the Rambam says God could do anything. On the contrary, the Rambam claims that people who say God could do anything is really absurd. In other words, if there was a chapter in the book where God says they're not true, for example, Descartes believed that 1 + 1 could equal 3. Rome obviously would reject that.
I'm just saying that saying something strongly doesn't turn it into a strong argument.
No, but you see over here that the Rambam is just doesn't state the theory. See, the Rambam is actually, in other words, what the Rambam is really doing is the Rambam is actually taking a certain amount of effort. No, but the Rambam didn't have to say this. Rambam said there's a sheet that holds that there's a primordial amorphous matter or substance which God will create the world. That's all he had to say. Why is he? In other words, he's giving a rationale for what they're saying. Why do that for? There's no reason for it. I mean, if the purpose of the Rambam was to present the other opinions and then, like I said, later chapters to reject them, right? There's no reason why, when the Rambam presents his opinions, doesn't have to actually, you know, not give alibis for them, but actually, in other words, justify them to a certain extent. That's the only remark I'm making. He's really not justifying it. Now he goes further. He says, because of this, very interesting, I also want to say, like this too, if you look at the way the Rambam operates too, just to continue on the same point, the Rambam doesn't say, opinion number two is, the opinion is that this was called a chaymo, this is called a hayuli, an amorphous matter which always existed. That's not the way he presents it. He presents it in a certain way. If Plato was presenting his opinion, he would present it like this. He's like, look, we assume that going from non-being to being is impossible, just like creating a square with the diagonal is equal to the sides. And this doesn't in any way detract from God's power, his power, because it can't exist. Therefore, I believe that there must be a primordial matter. In other words, that's the way Plato would present it. If I was presenting it to an audience and trying to convince them, that's why I present it. I'm just saying that Rambam's presentation here is not just to cite alternative theories. It's actually presenting it in the way in which they would have presented. That's what I think. Right? So, lachem, therefore, because of this, heimaminim sheish choyme kol shehu kodum kishem shaloya kodum. In other words, there's a matter which is primordial, just like Kodesh Baruch is prior. Asher akeh loy nimtza bilavodav. Kodesh Baruch cannot exist without this matter. V'choyme loy nimtza bilavodav akeh. And also, too, the matter cannot exist without God. It's very interesting. You can't have God without the matter, you can't have matter without God. Now it's interesting like this. God, if we think about these two things, why does the Rambam says it from both points of view? In other words, he says, God cannot exist without the primordial matter. Well, that makes sense. Because if God is in the primordial matter, why? Because then how can he create something? Well, given the fact that God is the creator, therefore what? No, given the fact that God created the world, he can't exist without this primordial matter. But what about the other side? The matter cannot exist without God. What do I have to say that for? The only reason I would say that would say that somehow I have to still believe that God is Kadum, which the Rambam says in the Yud Gimel Ikrim. In other words, if I was presenting the Shita, all I had to say was that God cannot exist without this primordial matter, because he can't bring it into creation. But why can't the matter exist without God? Why not? Unless I believe in God. I don't believe that God is God, though. Unless I believe in Yugi Malikrim.
That's his next line. His next line is...
What? No, that's different. No, 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 no that's the second step. No, the next line is that God can change the matter, but the matter can't change God. In other words, the matter is at the same level of God. What? In other words, the matter is there for God to change.
Other than saying that God is still superior to the...
How is it superior? Because he can change his form. It says, right? What does that mean? Is that God can take the matter and form a universe. That's what God is superior. It was the matter can't create a God, but God can take from this matter. He can't create ex nihilo, but he can fashion it, you know, to make the world we live in.
But not only that, but who sibas metzios shalachem?
What does that mean? What does that mean? He goes to explain what that means.
That is form or that is actual nature?
It can't be, because then he creates ex nihilo. That can't be. That will contradict the previous sentence. What he says is, sibas metzios hachoy mu lakel kabal amosh lachem lakadar. He explains what that means. Okay, in other words, what I see in this, I'm reading it too much, but what I see in this is that the Rambam already, not only is the Rambam justifying this opinion rationally, he's also giving it a theological hechsher. He's giving it a theological hechsher. Because there's no reason, I have to say, that the matter can't exist without God. That doesn't make any sense.
But he also seems to be saying that the matter can't exist without a form, because necessarily
matter... Oh, that's for sure.
And that form is always...
Subject to God. Right.
To God.
Yeah, fine. Now, the matter... The matter exists formless, and then God gives it form. We'll see in a little while. The matter...
No, he's saying something more like philosophical than that.
No, but a chomer lo nimtza... But no,
so why
but
does he start off saying... Then he says,
but he explains it afterwards.
Right, so what he's saying is that...
But a chomer like hadar has no form.
It does. It has some form.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have any form.
I can draw a picture of it.
No, but I think we'll go further. I don't think it has a form.
Because he does start off saying that.
I hear what you're saying, but it doesn't have a form. I think like if we associate this with the Hiyuli, for example, Hiyuli doesn't have any form. That's what we're saying, doesn't have any form. I will say, now, I'll tell you why. It can't really have form because, we'll see a little bit later, because in the kind of base parachafe, when the Rambam says I can believe in something like that, I have to attribute creation to this in some way. So I have to say it's formless. In other words, I can go from formless to form. I need some type of something which is like a dogma analogy to creation ex nihilo. Technical from formless to form, but we'll say, okay?
Sounds like he's saying that you can't think of matter without form, and you can't think of form.
He doesn't say that. No, he doesn't say that. He says the chomer. He doesn't say tzura. Chomer and tzura are two different things. Who bury b'chomer mashu loitz. He creates from the chomer what he wants. Li'itim, sometimes who ma'atza b'melo shemayim va'aretz. Sometimes what he wants, this is actually a ride to these two professors who are not the endless universe. He makes a big bang, which means he creates shemayim va'aretz. Sometimes he creates something else. Interesting, does he create something else from this? Is that like a Mahabba?
Sometimes.
I don't know. Now, to the Rambam, Ha'oichsim b'dei azois, those people who believe in this opinion, ma'aminim sha'af ha'shamayim mishavim v'chalim, they believe that even the heavens are capable of destruction, which means not destruction into non-being, but rather, in other words, just like the terrestrial world comes from this primordial chaima, this primordial substratum, so do the heavens. Now, which is very, very interesting, because actually the Greeks held that the heavens are actually not really physical. Okay? Which means is that this primordial substratum is not really physical in a certain sense. Because it can create the heavens. But they don't come from non-being. They cannot degenerate to non-being.
But this is Plato's, isn't it?
Yeah, no, this is Plato, Konami. No, but still,
Plato's world of forms, it's more...
Forms are more abstract, on the contrary. According to Plato and the Timaeus, actually, first come the forms, and the physical world is a certain type of the physical world is sort of like in the Timaeus, it seems to be that there are certain types of forms, and the physical world basically comes from these forms. Now, what does he mean by shamayim? Does he mean the forms? if he means the forms, right? So, I mean, we'd have to say Kosh Bol creates, so it must be this primordial Homer, whatever it is, comes before the forms. Now, if we say that it doesn't come before the forms, so what are the forms? Maybe the forms is God thinks, the forms, and then, you know, it's talking about Isa Ba'alba, and he creates the world. But if that's true, then not only is this Homer primordial, but the forms are primordial too. That's not so clear. We'll speak about that next week when I go into the Timaeus. Because, I'll tell you the truth, the issue of creation is not, this primordial matter is not the central theme of the Timaeus, of Plato. In fact, Lemaisa, the Rambam just picked it out from several places, but the Timaeus is not really, Plato's not really interested in primordial forms. He's interested actually in what's called, you know, these abstract forms. Primordial, not primordial, like, substance, but abstract forms which the world has created. In other words, it's not clear how this fits into Plato's theory. He picked it out here and there. He quotes the Timaeus, but that requires, that's Sarchil. But in any case, he says, El she'ena betavim le'dova. But what's interesting is, what I want to claim is that, like now what you're saying, I mean, if I learn the Pashtos, simply, in other words, if I say that this primordial thing is before anything, so it can't be just matter, it's not matter, like clay. Because if it's clay, then how do the heavens come out of it? Because the heavens of Plato had perfect circular motion. Let's put it this way.
When we shouldn't talk about, like, you know, chaymer dako, something like that. That's like it's thinner than the actual substance we might touch.
I think in Plato, I don't know. I'll tell you the joke. I'm not sure. I have to. In the Timaeus, first of all, you should know something. In the Timaeus, it's not so clear that Plato believes in a god who creates the world. In fact, actually, in a certain sense, the Timaeus, he calls it a mythology. Right. In other words, I mean, I think the Rambam is making Plato into more fun than he really is.
Mythology then meant something.
No, creation of a god. In the Timaeus, see, the Timaeus is not really a book that's devoted to creation. In fact, actually, creation, I read through the Timaeus last day or two. Creation is not the central point of the Timaeus. By the way, it's not the central point of Aristotle either. Plato and Aristotle, there was a dispute between Plato and Aristotle of how to describe the world, the physical world. Plato believed that the world can be described in terms of an overarching mathematical system. In other words, there was a sect of people called the Pythagoreans who believed that the world was actually equal to mathematics. Plato argued with them, but Plato believed that the world is somehow an expression or an imperfect model of a mathematical system. In fact, actually, the four elements of Plato were given actually geometrical meaning. That's Plato's theory. Because Plato believed that the world is an approximation to an a priori mathematical system. That describes the world. And Aristotle rejected Plato. Aristotle has an argument against Plato. And then he claims that there is no underlying mathematical a model upon which the world is based. But Aristotle believed that the purpose of science was to classify the different types of forms that exist in the physical world. In a certain sense, Aristotle makes physics into biology. Even though Aristotle believed that, in other words, the planets and everything were not completely physical, but you know, like we spoke about that, you know, I think previously, that was sort of like circular motion. It's more of a physical thing. It's not an abstract concept of time in Aristotle. It's like circular motion. That's a real thing. But, in other words, these the dispute between Aristotle and Plato is not so much a dispute in how God created the world. That's really a dispute of how nature works, how we scientifically describe nature. And Plato understands that nature has a underlying mathematical basis, of which the physical world is something like an approximation, and is some type of a substance, or some type of an extension, which leads from the mathematics to what we call the physical world. But as it leads to the physical world, the mathematical precision is lost to a certain extent. Whereas in Aristotle, there is no underlying mathematical basis. There's merely a world of forms. And the purpose of the scientist is basically to classify the different forms. This is their dispute in science. One of the reasons that science was held up for so many years until the 16th century, until Newton, was precisely because the world was enamored or terrorized by the Aristotelians, who didn't believe that one could, you know, mathematically describe, you know, physical motion. And that wasn't until like Galileo or Newton that scientists were able to break through and reject the Aristotelian system. Now, the fact is that, in other words, just like the Bale Chaim exists from a underlying substance which exists, the Kalim. In other words, also the Shemayim too, which means that, in other words, I think certainly what he's saying is don't think the heavens are more spiritual than the physical. In other words, the heavens also come, in other words, this substratum is more basic than even the heavens too. That's what he's claiming. In other words, basically what he's saying is there's no difference between heavens and earth. In other words, the claim is not here that the heavens exist because they're more perfect, they're more closer to pure mathematical forms, and therefore they're prior to God too. No, God is both who creates them too. That's his yesod. That's his underlying idea. Okay? But once again, there's no mention of Plato's forms. Plato's forms are absent here. In other words, if you read the Timaeus, the main thesis of Plato is that the world is created from forms. Now, all the Rambam speaks about here is Shamayim. He doesn't speak about forms. The question is, right, what are these forms? So, I mean, my question is, did the Rambam just sort of like ignore them? And as far as the Rambam is concerned, there's the primal matter, the Chomer, and then that creates the heavens? Or did the Rambam really want to say that these forms exist in Perek Yud Beis, where the Rambam speaks about God thinking and the thoughts of God right before the world was created? That's my big tzorach iyun here on the Rambam. Well, basically, the Rambam certainly is not giving us the full picture of Plato's theory. That's for sure not. Now, it could possibly be that the Rambam somehow believed that the forms are actually thoughts of God, which he describes in Perek Yud Beis. And in Perek Yud Gimel, he's speaking about the more physical aspects of the universe. In other words, the heavens are certainly more physical than the actual forms, which is like a little bit of a tzorach iyun. In other words, are the forms, you know, really kadum like a kadosh baruch, or the Rambam's leaving that out. I'm not speaking about that. That's my big question here. Anyway, this is Plato. B'nei zos b'schalkim l'kita t'sha'in ta'el t'laskiri som ebes da'asim b'sein fazeh. In other words, there are different, Rambam says there are different groups of Platonists. Aval ikur k'choli shal siya zos hi mashit zamt l'cham. But I'll give you the basic ideas. Zoisar said gam da'at shal apalto. So this is the theory of Plato. Ata timtza sh'aristo moisa mishmoy b'physika shehu kolom apalto ma'amin sh'ashamayim etalim v'kalim. In other words, Aristotle, you know, right, quotes or presents his theory that in fact the heavens, according to Plato, were created. the Chayin Tibbs says she doesn't force for Sefer Shel Tibbius. Okay? You can find his sheet on Tibbius. I mean, on Tibbius is written in Greek, on the Rambam read Greek.
Could have been translated.
Into Arabic, yeah. Into Arabic. But he doesn't believe into what we believe. Right? Right? Kamisha Sova, in other words, evidently, someone believes that Plato believes what we believe in. I'm not sure what Rambam's referring to. It says it's not being Meduya. Someone thinks that our sheet is like the sheet of Plato. In a double cup, it's not true, says the Rambam. Interesting. Who is the Rambam referring to the person who thinks that our opinion, Plato's opinion, are one and the same? And I don't see that Professor Schwartz provides any footnote here. Okay, now, let's go further. So this is Plato. As I said before, the Rambam's presentation of Plato raises more problems than it raises many, many problems. Exactly, where does this Chomer fit in into Plato? And so we'll speak about that. I mean, shall we get to when we speak? We have to go into Timaeus and see that's what Plato said. But this is the Rambam. This is the way the Rambam looks at Plato. But the very fact is, the Rambam has not presented any reason. The Rambam has presented plenty of rationale for thinking the way he thinks. In other words, you would expect, I mean, the major problem in Plato's theory is, to argue in Plato's theory, you would have to make an argument that believing that something can come from nothing is not on the same scale as believing that a square can have a diagonal equal to one of the sides. In which you'd have to make that argument. Now, L'chaira, maybe we'd have to find an argument in the book. I'm not sure we find it in the book. Not to mention, the Rambam's attack on the Kalam, we find things which are much more believable, which in fact the Rambam says we can't believe, can't be. So that's the major question. Listen, when a person reads this, the major question is, well, why not to reject Plato? Not to mention the fact that the Rambam says that there's someone who thinks that our sheet is the same as the sheet of Plato. The Rambam rejects that too, but there's someone... The fact that someone should think, and Rambam should mention, someone should think that our opinion is similar to that Plato means, then what? Is that, in fact, actually, in other words, there's a lot in common between the two things. All right, let's go further. Now, Hadei HaShlishish. Hudatim Shalarista Bahokim Mikvus Mufashis Fomo. So the third sheet is the opinion of Aristotle. Aristotle Doge Masha Omo Bani Asiya Shehusku Koidem. Of course he holds, right, that something cannot come from non-being. Now he answers this. Also, the Rambam says, I mean, according to Aristotle, the heavens, right, cannot come from any primordial substratum, which means the heavens are a different type of species than the terrestrial world. In other words, the main point of Aristotle is that things which are of total different forms cannot, in other words, there's no overall overarching substratum to all of nature. Just like the heavens are different from the earth, so the heavens could not have come from any substratum that produced the earth too. That's what Aristotle is saying. That's really the main thrust of what he's saying. Tam zdat bin ezeh huzos, hu toin shehanimsa azeh kulo, kefishu haya ma'il v'yag oil v'kach. In other words, the way the world is the way it always was, which means there's no overarching mathematical process, right, which describes form from non-form, from more elementary forms. But rather, the purpose of science is to classify different forms. Therefore, the world, the way it is, the way it always was. In other words, according to Aristotle, there's no evolution in nature. Evolution is a Platonic concept because in Plato, I can construct models, theoretical models, that go from abstract mathematical concepts, right, which present, let's say, the basic logic of certain things, into the way they express themselves, right, in a macroscopic way. Shainis avzakin lechayim alav, kloyma ha-shamayim, lo yamsik li oskach. Hazman vatnu nitzchim masmidin, lo mishavim lo kalam. In other words, every form is the way it is. All forms are irreducible, according to Aristotle. The purpose of science is to classify the forms. In a certain sense, what Aristotle does, he makes physics into biology. Just like in biology, at least until very recently, and maybe recently too, biology is usually classifying things. Biology doesn't look at its subject matter like physical subject matter, is that nature's composed of these, you know, sort of like these, the substrata of subatomic and particles, which almost have a certain sort of abstract mathematical nature. That's more Platonic. Our solar system is basically classifying macroscopic forms. In other words, there are different forms, but there's no collapse to any substratum. Say this is a kuloi. Now it's interesting, we have to be very exact here. If something changes forms, so therefore what does he say? Einu mishava v'loi kola. In other words, the Rambam is not speaking about Kreshek's Nihilo here. Because Plato says the Shemayim can mishava v'chala. So I understand the fact is, according to Plato, something cannot go from having a form to being formless. Everything has a form. In other words, there's something called a formless state. It's not non-being, it's a formless state. According to Aristotle, you go from one form to another form. But you can never go from a formless state to something formal. According to Plato, you can go from a formless state to a form state. That's the difference. In other words, according to Plato, the matter can break down and go back to its basic substrata, which we wouldn't identify it for. According to Aristotle, you can go from one form to another form, but both forms have to be, in other words, on the same level of perplexity. You can never go from complex to basic to a basic substratum form. That's how I understand it. In other words, nature always, basically, according to Aristotle, nature in a certain sense is cyclical. Remember, we thought this concept of time is also cyclical. Nature goes in cyclical patterns, circular patterns. But there's no evolution. There's no kinds of evolution. I saw that in Yeshabes on Vechik 2 in his lectures. He says that evolution was foreign to the Rishonim because it was foreign to the Greeks. The Greeks didn't believe in evolution. They believed that basically you go from one form to another form, but nothing evolves from simple to complex. That's what Yeshabes on Vechik says. Lamaisa, so that's what he says. In other words, evolution, in other words, he says the Greeks could never think of evolution. He wants to claim that the concept of evolution is much closer to Jewish thinking, because Jewish thinking consists of God that creates a substrata, and from these things, complex forms arise from very simple forms. And he claims that this was far into Greek thinking that doesn't believe in evolution of forms. Now, I wrote a footnote there, and I asked myself the question, what does he mean by that? So he probably means Aristotle, not Plato. According to Plato, there is a concept of evolution. You can go from a substrata to a complex form. Yeshabes Soloveitchik is probably referring to Aristotle, who believed that what? You can never go from simple forms to more complex forms. There's categories of forms. You can go from one category to another category. But you never go from a substrata, formless substrata, to a form. That's how we understand what he was saying. He says, Avshal Ombazois Bzahaloshin. It's interesting that even though he doesn't say this in this way, okay, now comes the Rambam and says, what's the Pshat in Aristotle? Like this now. What is the Rambam saying? The Rambam says Once again, the Rambam says, even though he doesn't say this, what's the maskana from what he's saying? In other words, it's parallel to what the Rambam said above in Plato, b'toit devireya muvan shem oimre. Now, what the Rambam is saying is, what Aristotle is really saying is, it can't be that there could be a rot in the Kodesh Baruch Hu that it's beskadish. In other words, it can't be a new rot in the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, what's interesting is that why not? I mean, that's a good idea. The Rambam himself says in Chelek Gimel, I think Perachav Chav Aleph, that it can't be that a Kodesh Baruch Hu knows something now that he didn't know beforehand. But it can't be that there's Meschadish, in other words, that there's a renewal of knowledge in God. In other words, everything God knows now, he always had to have known. If you say God knows something now that he didn't know before, basically detracting from God's perfection. Now, what's Aristotle saying? He's saying the same. I mean, he's saying something very similar. You can't say that God has a ratzon, a will now, that he didn't have an hour ago. Why? Because if you say, in fact, that God has a ratzon right now, so you're attributing a certain type of imperfection to God. Now, my question is, what's wrong with that? On the contrary, it would appear that Aristotle has a much more, I'm going to say this with great humility, a greater concept of perfection of God, right, than in fact actually the Rambam. Aristotle is attributing a much more of a monotheistic notion of God, insofar as just like the Rambam claims that God can never know something now he didn't know previously. So Aristotle is saying the same thing we say with God's will. God can never have a will which he didn't have previously. Now, that's what he says. Oh, says the Rambam like this. Aristotle's very good. Just like we say that what? Just like it's impossible that God should cease to exist, right? Or tishtana atzmusai. Or that God's essence should change. You can't say too that what? That God should have a new will that he didn't have before that. Becomes chayiv shanitzah zekulo kvishuav shemkein miyoyim b'chachi on the netzach. So it has to be that everything was always the same. I mean, if you really focus, if you really reflect upon what he's saying, he seems to be saying is, this is a Aristotle's system is, let's say, it's good for the God side. It's more monotheistic. Because it attributes that God's will is never changing, just like his knowledge is never changing. So, what happens is, what you get here is a very interesting anomaly here. Both the second opinion, that the Platonic theory, we'll call it Platonic theory, and the third opinion, which is the Aristotle's theory, both have aspects of them, right, which are pluses, namely the Aristotelian theory. In other words, like this, if I reject Aristotle, I have to come up with an explanation. How could it be that the ultimate perfect deity, right, can change his will? And if I reject Plato, I have to come up with a theory. Why is it that going from non-being to being is more logically palatable than creating a square where the diagonal is equal to one of the sides? In other words, I just can't reject them. If I reject Aristotelian system, in a certain sense, I have to make a compromise on my monotheism. And if I reject the Platonic system, I have to make a compromise on my rationalism. Very interesting. Okay, now. Says the Rambam. So in other words, what the Rambam is really doing is that mitoch, within his presentation of these two theories, he's in a certain sense expressing, you know, the challenge, in other words, the challenge that these theories have to creation ex nihilo. Meaning what? I mean, what's the maskana? What's the maskana that I may achieve this draw? That in fact, actually, you can't really reject these theories. You have to say that both are true. That's what you really have to say. In other words, in a certain sense, in other words, what am I going to do? I'm going to reject these two theories and claim that God is less rational or less incorporeal?
If you're accepting Aristotle, you're not being without on any kind of rational.
Yes, I am. Oh, I accept him.
Aristotle.
I said if I reject
Plato's.
Him. No, if I reject him. No, right. Aristotle, I'm rejecting on God's perfection. His Gottzon, his Mischadish. What I'm saying is, in other words, if I reject
Do we know for sure that according to Ram that's a problem? Because we know that God has to have free will.
Well, what does that mean? God has to have free will, but what does that mean? Could it mean that he changes his mind?
So then,
he can't change his knowledge.
Do you know anywhere that the Ram holds, it has to be that God can change his mind?
The Ram says God, I don't know what changes my mind. If the Ram is going to be rejecting Aristotle, the Ram has to claim that God is changing his mind. But if God is changing his mind, how could a perfect being change his mind? That's
so
the question.
Really in Plato we found a problem.
And Aristotle found a problem too.
And Aristotle we have a problem? What's the problem?
No, Plato's a problem. Wait. If I reject Plato...
In Plato the problem is that...
That God's irrational. I'm claiming that God can do something which L'Chaira seems to be irrational.
For Plato?
Yeah, from non-being to being. For Arbol...
No, Plato doesn't believe in non-being from being.
No. If I reject Plato...
For something other than Aristotle.
Right. Aristotle is in both.
If I accept Plato,
If I reject Plato, so I have to have an explanation, why is it rational to go from non-being to being.
Right, and if I accept Plato, then I have to be able to explain why it's...
What's the problem if I reject Plato?
You have to be able to explain why it's not a theory to monotheism to believe that God can change, so to speak.
All right, fine, very good. But now, Aristotle's the best.
Right.
Aristotle is the best, right? Because in Aristotle, God doesn't change his will, and he certainly doesn't create being from non-being. So in other words, Aristotle's... Aristotle's conception of creation is the most monotheistic. Now, the fact is that 1 plus 1 equals 2. The Rambam, in his proof of the incorporeality of God, right, the first proof, one of his premises is the eternity of the universe. Which means that the Rambam is clearly stating, and even though the Rambam offers another proof who doesn't use it, but nonetheless, the Rambam refers to other places that his proof of the eternity of God, he says again and again in several places in the Menavuch, we'll see another time, that his proof of the creation of, this proof of God's reality rested on the premise that the world's eternal, meaning there's no question about it that the Rambam is somehow making a very, very strong philosophical connection between the eternity of the universe and monotheism. Meaning God's incorporeality. In other words, the eternity of the universe, certainly in the strong sense, it solely reproduces the most powerful concept of monotheism, namely a perfect God, a perfect, unchanging, rational God. Any detraction from the eternal universe, any concept of creation, carries with it a compromise on monotheism. That's really what the Rambam is saying here. We take the Vav. That That's what he's saying here. That's it's a Pella. It's a Pella. It's one of the, this is the paradox of creation in the Rambam. There definitely, according to the Rambam, there's no question about it, I mean, we spoke about this already, that according to the Rambam, there is a standing contradiction between monotheism and creationism. And it's coming out in everything the Rambam writes. The Rambam's saying it. I mean, he's saying it. How are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
You have time left? Okay, fine. Now, let's just finish up a little bit, okay? Let's finish up over here. Yeah.
The Ramallah is, or Kon Arsol, is the furthest away there from Prayer Shemayim.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah. Kon Arsol, nothing ever changed.
For the rationally and monotheistically, it's very pleasing, but still, with regards to Torah, it's very far away.
No! No, that's a contradiction. In other words, there's a they're related. They're inversely related. As S goes to infinity, 1/x goes to 0. In other words, if X equals monotheism, as X goes to infinity, creation goes to 0, and vice versa. Right. That's for sure. That's the standing problem for the Rambam.
As well, what we're doing as well in Aristotle is we're also elevating nature to that of a much more superior kind of heavenly level. We're also making nature closer to, if it's unchanging as well, always was, so it's also closer to being an eternal being, to being a higher being.
No, I disagree with you, because a higher being, what do you mean, that it can't be changed?
Yeah.
God is subject.
That is...
Fine, that's Lemaisa, I mean, what comes out from this... is that, right, in fact, even more so, we spoke about the concept of time in Aristotle versus the Stoics. We spoke about the Stoics had absolute concept of time and space, which one could say is somehow of an indication of divinity, of a divine. For us, for Aristotle, right, there's only things which exist. There's no empty space in the universe. So it's a little bit what the physicist Smolin spoke about, that in fact actually it's closer to the modern concept of space-time, that there are, let's say, holes in the universe. A man could peek through the holes and say, oh, that's the action of God. What you have is what you get, what you get is what you have. What you see is what you have. Which means that any talk of God has to be something which has no connection whatsoever with the physical universe. In fact, that's another way of phrasing what we've been speaking about. If I make the universe dense, I have to throw God out of the universe. What the Kalam did, what the Stoics did, is they put holes in the universe. Vacuum. This vacuum in time. Time is what the Rambam attributes to Galen. The Galen is that time is discrete. They put holes in the universe. If they put holes in the universe, then there's a Hebishter. The Tati is here. The holes in the universe. If I say the universe is just exists, there's no holes in the universe, there's no room for God. Except he's an abstract concept that has no connection whatsoever with the physical world. That's the... Okay, fine. Let's... The Rambam says, Zosi Tamtzum Hades. Which really... And maybe let me just summarize, which really changes the whole way we look at the Maor Nevuchim. The Maor Nevuchim is not, the Rambam's presentation of the Maor Nevuchim is not going to be an attack on Aristotle, according to what I'm saying. But it's going to have to be, in a certain sense, how can I live with both concepts? How can I live with Estina? How can I live with monotheism? And with God having created the world, God's free will. That's the problem. In other words, we have here an incredible paradox. And Lemaisa, the sections of creation, in my opinion, is going to be the Rambam struggle. How do I live with this paradox? How do I organize myself around this paradox? It's like a my teacher at Princeton, Saul Kripke, used to say that in the history of philosophy, there are great philosophers that ask what's called, I mean, they use this Lashon, using Yeshivish language of Bamba Kasha. They ask questions that like rip apart everything we think about the world. We don't even know where we are. So he says that sometimes they give an answer and the Kasha didn't exist. But he said the great thinkers don't really give a table, it's an answer to the question. What they do is they basically try to find a way of making us feeling comfortable with the question. Wittgenstein had questions on language at the end, how can we live with it? We have to live with the question. The great philosophers say, in hachinami. We have to live with the question. So the question is, how is the Rambam going to live with this question? That's really the challenge in the Baruch Hashem. Right. From the outside, the exoteric Rambam is, how am I going to smash Aristotle? So the guy who doesn't really understand what's going on thinks, oh, you wrote a righteous Aristotle, you refuted Aristotle. Like the guy who wrote the article Jewish Observer, the Rambam refuted Aristotle. The person who really understands the Talmud understands, no, you can't refute him because you need both concepts. How are you going to live with both concepts? How can live with this contradiction? The lonely man of faith. Maybe we'll stop over here, okay? This is a good place. This is a good place to stop.